Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Michigan, the critical state which Obama's campaign adviser David Axelrod has vowed if they lose, he will shave off his moustache. The former governor of Michigan, Jennifer Granholm, joins us to discuss the willfully dishonest ads the Romney campaign are running, claiming Detroit is moving production to China, which have prompted angry denials from the heads of GM and Chrysler. Governor Granholm has an article at the Huffington Post, "Ohioans won't be fooled by car guys' desperate car lies." Then we will speak with an insurance expert, Jeffrey Stempel, professor of law at the University of Nevada's Las Vegas School of Law, where he teaches insurance law. We will discuss the growing losses insurers are experiencing from monster storms like Andrew, Katrina, Irene, and now Sandy, and how much Wall Street, which was just flooded, and the insurance giants will recognize the economic reality of global warming and push back against the deniers funded by big oil and coal. Then finally, we will speak with Jeff Cohen, the founder of the media watch group FAIR and the co-founder of RootsAction.org, who have launched a safe state, swing states voting strategy to enable progressives to signal their displeasure with establishment candidates while avoiding helping elect their worst possible nightmares, as happened in Florida in 2000 with Ralph Nader helping elect George W. Bush. Joining us now is Jennifer Granholm, the former governor of Michigan and a distinguished practitioner of law and public policy at the University of California, Berkeley, the host of The War Room with Jennifer Granholm, which airs weeknights on Current TV. She was elected governor of Michigan in 2002 and in 2006 was re-elected with the largest number of votes ever cast for governor in Michigan. Her latest book is A Governor's Story, The Fight for Jobs and America's Economic Future. And she has an article at the Huffington Post, "Ohioans Won't Be Fooled by the Car Guy's Desperate Car Lies." Welcome to Background Briefing, Jennifer Granholm.
Thank you.
And your state is, well, the president and his team say that they will win it. And in fact, they said that David Axelrod said he would shave his mustache off if they didn't win it. But it's coming down to, this is becoming a key state in terms of a last minute effort on the part of Mitt Romney to sort of change history, if you will. Is it working in terms of these sort of last-minute sneak attacks, both on TV and radio, suggesting that somehow he's the champion of the American car industry and that Obama is going to outsource cars to China?
Okay, first, there's a reason he's running those ads in Michigan and in Ohio. It's because he's losing badly, and it's a Hail Mary pass to try to salvage something. But the choice of these ads was absolutely the boneheadedest move I could imagine, because people in these states know exactly what happened during the auto rescue. And he can't pull the wool over their eyes, nor can he tell them lies about the Obama administration saving the auto industry, which is causing cars now to be made in China and not in the United States. You know, the stupidity of this commercial is such that it's obviously caused the CEOs of Chrysler and of General Motors to put out statements saying that's absolutely not true. And in Chrysler's case, they're expanding employment in the United States, both in Toledo and in Detroit. So truly, it's a sign that their campaign is faltering, that he needs a new path to be able to get to 270 delegates without Ohio, but he's certainly not going to get it by taking out ads that blatantly lie when people know it.
Well, the CEO of Chrysler, his letter in the Detroit News was almost contemptuous of Romney, and the GM lashed out at him too, where their spokesman said, "We've clearly entered some parallel universe during these last few days. No amount of campaign politics at its cynical worst will diminish our record of creating jobs in the U.S. and repatriating profits back to this country." So what's good for GM is good for America, right? And they're saying that we are exemplars of capitalism. We provide jobs and repatriate profits from our successful operations abroad. Do you think it shines a light on the difference between traditional capitalism and this new kind of slash-and-burn, asset-stripping, vulture capitalism that Bain Capital and Mitt Romney represents?
That's such an interesting question. Yes, I absolutely do think that it sheds a light on the practices of certainly Mitt Romney's company, and when he says that he is a job creator, when in fact he was, as we used to call it in Michigan, he's a stripper and flipper. So he would strip the companies and then flip them to make a profit. and, of course, take huge management fees in the process. That's what a lot of private equity does. Now, sometimes private equity makes that investment and the company gets healthier, and they do put it up for sale, and it lasts. But the point is that they're not making stuff. They're making paper that that transfers ownership or slims down a company, and that's the sort of new wave of Wall Street capitalism, Wall Street-only capitalism, as opposed to the traditional way where you actually make something of value and you respond to demand in the economy and you sell that stuff. But that's what the auto industry is all about. And I also think there's a new kind of public-private partnership model that the auto industry represents, where, of course, the United States government felt it was important for our nation's need to have a manufacturing sector. And so they shored up the backbone of the manufacturing sector, which is the automotive industry, a country that makes nothing. Is a weak nation, and that was the decision of the Obama administration, is that we cannot lose these middle-class jobs or the means to produce our own defense, frankly, because you remember in World War II, all of those auto factories converted quickly to be able to make the B-17 and the B-24 bombers. So bottom line is, it is a different kind of capitalism that Mitt Romney's Bain Capital and others represent. And it's not been a strategy that's been good for workers or for the country.
Again, I'm speaking with Jennifer Granholm, who is the former governor of Michigan, distinguished practitioner of law and public policy at the University of California, Berkeley, and the host of The War Room with Jennifer Granholm, which airs weeknights on Current TV. Her latest book is A Governor's Story, The Fights for Jobs and America's Economic Future. And she has an article at the Huffington Post, Ohioans Won't Be Fooled by Car Guys' Desperate Car Lies. So you mentioned Wall Street. Of course, Wall Street was almost underwater, the battery. The titans of Wall Street actually got their toes wet, and I'm wondering, they're giving all their money to Romney at this time. They were generous towards Obama in 2008, but they've clearly switched and essentially trying to elect one of their own. Romney's remarks at the Republican convention about global warming, which has now come to slap us in the face with this superstorm Sandy, he said that Obama wants to stop the earth from warming and the oceans from rising, to great laughter from the Republican delegates. And then he said, but I'll help you and your family. That kind of that sort of snide cynicism may have worked in that audience. Do you think it's working today in the face of what we've just seen?
No, I think that the evidence from Superstorm Sandy, as you call it, is evidence that these intense, ferocious climate events that are happening across the country and have continued to happen, and the number of them and their frequency and their intensity, are clearly caused by human-caused global warming and climate change, and that the idea that you would scoff at that as though that's not one of the things that's good for your family is to be able to help mitigate the effects of climate change and then help to wisely adapt to the changes that have already made. They're making decisions right now, Ian, about how they're going to rebuild Lower Manhattan. And what is that going to look like? Do you just put something up that is similar to what existed before when we've entered a new normal because we haven't done anything about climate change, and therefore do you end up paying a lot more money having to continually clean up the effects of this, or do you, yes, shore up your infrastructure, but also take steps to mitigate the damage, and I mean the damage from climate change. That means getting a national energy policy. So hopefully, there was Chris Christie was touring the shore with the president. You cannot look at these impacts, this kind of storm, which is a historic storm for them. Know that that's going to not be the worst storm you ever see because of the changes in the atmosphere, and say that that there's no cause for that, and the strong causal link between our burning of dirty energy and the weather that we are seeing has to be front and center in Congress's agenda in a second term of the Obama administration.
Again, I'm speaking with Jennifer Granholm, who's the host of The War Room with Jennifer Granholm, which airs weeknights on Current TV. She also has an article in the Huffington Post, Ohioans Won't Be Fooled by Car Guys, Desperate Car Lies. And it's not the first time that Mitt Romney has run willfully dishonest television ads. In fact, the first ad that he ran in the primaries in Iowa, he put John McCain's words in Barack Obama's mouth, and he has lied with alacrity that's quite disturbing, the ease with which he lies. And these last-minute ads in Toledo and other markets that we're talking about are just the continuation of something that's been going on from day one. And I'm just wondering, given that now Mitt Romney simply won't answer questions from the press, in the last few days they've been shouting questions at him about his stance on FEMA, which he wanted to privatize and send back to the states, and he simply refused to answer it. Is that a harbinger for what kind of a president he would be, in effect? You know, in the idea that he'd be the CEO of the United States Incorporated, and what we're witnessing now is an attempt at a leveraged buyout of USA Inc. They'll put him in as a CEO, and he'll essentially have a vice president in charge of public affairs who will release press releases, but he simply won't be accessible to anybody. I mean, this is a man who will not release his tax returns. So I have, I think, a reasonable suspicion that this is a very arrogant a man who really doesn't feel that he owes the public any explanations.
Well, I think it's more than arrogance. I think that what he wants to be able to win this office at all costs, win it without honor. No matter what, the important thing is that he get in the office, regardless of how he got there. And so he's obviously demonstrated in this campaign how he would govern if he were in the office, be through deception. It's not just flip-flopping. I think flip-flopping that everybody talks about, it's too benign. It is really a deep ambition, but ambition in the negative sense of the word, that he is willing to do anything and say anything to be elected. Fortunately, I believe so strongly that that people are smarter than that. And so when he flip-flops on almost every single subject, you talk about FEMA and the fact that the press were shouting out questions. Well, today his press secretary issued a statement saying that he's not going to cut the funding of FEMA. He believes strongly in FEMA because he knows that if he were to stand by the position that he took several months ago in the Republican primary debates, that people would be jumping all over him. It doesn't matter to him. He just is ready to say anything or do anything because it's all about just getting in office. That should scare people.
Well, if he'll say anything to close the deal, what I find extraordinary and very disturbing about it is that it does feel like ambition without purpose. Right. I mean, we know we lived through the nightmare of George W. Bush's Oedipal problems, where he wanted to prove something to his father and started a war in Iraq, which, you know, he was beguiled by the neocons that he could finish what his father didn't finish. And that, of course, ended up being the worst strategic blunder. In fact, one historian said it was the worst strategic blunder since Emperor Augustus sent his legions into Germany in 9 AD. So we've already seen. Do you understand what it's about? What makes this guy tick?
Well,
is his father? Yeah. He wants to prove something to the late George Romney, who incidentally released all of his taxes and set the standard.
Well, it's interesting you ask that. I mean, I'm no armchair psychologist, but it is an amazing you know, everybody always tries to please their parent, right? But his father did run for president, and it was the one thing his father was not able to achieve. And Mitt Romney was at an impressionable age when that happened. And Mitt Romney's dad, you know, I used to sit as governor of Michigan in the Romney building because the building was named after his dad. He was very revered and was seen as a man of honor and of selflessness, of really trying to get people to engage in volunteerism, a great champion of urban areas and of the poor. You know, the son is not the father. He's a totally different guy. And so I do think that he's trying to avenge his father's loss. That again, is from somebody who's not a psychologist. It does seem to be a bit edible in that way. But I also believe that he has just a different mindset. He has never had to. This is not his fault, but he has never had to experience trouble or trauma in terms of his lacking something. He hasn't had to fight or claw for a job or to put food on the table. It's always been part of his existence. And so when he starts a company and the MO of the company ends up being to slim down companies and to lay people off, et cetera. It just doesn't impact him in the way that it would somebody who maybe have gone through personal struggle like that. And, you know, I just think that there's a combination of both what he's done as head of Bain and how that has sort of, you know, hardened him in a way and had to, and what he has experienced growing up that leads to a candidate that I think is, well, obviously I'm partisan, but is somebody who will not be a good president.
So, Jennifer Granholm, is there, though, an element here in our polity, and in particularly in the people that Romney's appealing to, the so-called Reagan Democrats, blue-collar, mostly white men, and we know that there's demographic changes underway in America that's making a lot of white males in particular insecure about the future and susceptible to racist demagoguery. But in appealing to blue-collar people, the sort of Joe the Plumbers, you get the feeling that what might be working in Romney's favor is a kind of form of the Stockholm syndrome, where you eventually identify with your torturer. You think that the CEO, the job creator, even though part of your mind tells you that these are the guys that are laying you and your friends off, maybe this guy will save us. I mean, I know we're venturing again in...
We are venturing into dangerous territory for somebody who's a mere politician, for sure. But, I don't want to be arrogant myself into thinking that I know what's driving people to vote for or against somebody, but it is a really curious thing, and we often talk about this. Thomas Frank wrote a great book called What's the Matter with Kansas, where he was asking the question, why is it that a lot of those voters vote against their self-interest, you know, and his conclusion really is that there is really something very deep about the values side of things that motivates people. But even on that, I mean, it's just so interesting because Mitt Romney, you know, he said that he's a strong values guy in terms of, for example, a woman's right to choose. He's now, you know, he's pro-life, et cetera, which is a new position for him. But now this week, Senator Norm Coleman was sent out to say, oh, he's not going to appoint justices that would overturn Roe versus Wade, when he very much made a pledge to do that. So even on the values side, you wonder where he really is. What is this man's core? And then it gets back to your fundamental question is, so therefore, if he doesn't have a values core and he doesn't, and it's against my economic interest, why am I voting this way? That is the $24,000 question.
Well, yeah, just in closing, Jennifer Granholm, his judicial appointments advisor is Robert Bork. So I think I'd take Norm Coleman's with a grain of salt. I thank you for joining us, Jennifer Granholm. Enjoyed the conversation.
Yes, likewise. Thanks so much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Jennifer Granholm, who is the former governor of Michigan and a distinguished practitioner of law and public policy at the University of California, Berkeley, the host of The War Room with Jennifer Granholm, which airs weeknights on Current TV. She was elected governor of Michigan in 2002 and in 2006 was reelected with the largest number of votes ever cast for a governor in Michigan. Her latest book is A Governor's Story, The Fight for Jobs and America's Economic Future, and she has an article at the Huffington Post, Ohioans Won't Be Fooled by Car Guys' Desperate Car Lies. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with an insurance expert about whether or not insurance companies will take on the oil companies to stop global warming denial.
Rivers run